I've got nothing to say about
porn. Well, I had a dream a few nights ago that I went to see one of these in theaters, and the intro was like taking too long to the lead up of whatever the incident was. And when it finally started to like happen out loud in the audience, I said, finally, and everybody started laughing. And I can't remember what the accident was though.
Damn. Yeah. Well, you said you were thinking of a natural disaster one as a potential opener for six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was thinking about that this morning when that very light earthquake happened in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because like I was on Twitter at the time. I was like laying in bed still, and like all the East Coast people and New York people I follow started posting about it at the same time. And I was like,
earthquake?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Some people were like, you know, they were making jokes. Like my timeline was full of earthquake jokes since nothing really got damaged and no one got hurt. That's mm-hmm, fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was pretty fun. Twitter was fun for a minute.
Yeah.
It's not just this hell void.
I mean, I didn't even know that New York could get earthquakes. I had no idea.
Pretty rare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not sure where the plates are over there.
Yeah. It was a lot of people, like I said, like in New York City making jokes about it. Like, sorry, that was me. I just dropped something heavy. Like, like type of thing. I think that was Claire Penis said that on Twitter. And then it was all like West Coast people like doing like, oh, is this your first time? Like,
yeah.
type things.
Yeah.
I mean, we are very overdue and it scares me a lot.
And we're right on top of like six different fault lines.
Volcanoes too. We've got anything's going to trigger a fucking volcano. Also, we got one in front of us, one behind us.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. Well, the people of New York City are resilient, and by like mid-afternoon t-shirt shops were already selling I Survived New York City Earthquake shirts. That was hilarious.
I support that. That's great.
Good for them.
Yeah, that's entrepreneurship and ingenuity. Yeah. Capitalism New York City, action. Baby.
Welcome to the Haunted Hotel. You can check in, but you may never check
All right. Well, welcome back to The Screaming Room, everybody. The only podcast about horror movies. This is Sam, and I'm here today with my co-hosts, Ralph and Scott. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you both doing today?
Doing pretty good.
Great. Yeah. Good.
And we are up here at Northgate Studios today.
A satellite of Holman Studios.
We got bored with Holman the first studios. Three studios.
Yeah.
So we started, a nomadic lifestyle.
Started renting out a fourth. And before we get too far into this, thank you to our new donor, Victoria. I'll say Victoria. I didn't ask if Victoria wanted their full name read on the podcast.
Yeah.
It's donations. It's donors like you, Victoria, that help us afford four different studio rentals at the same time.
Thank you, Victoria.
You pay for our bougie lifestyle. We appreciate you.
Yeah. This is why you always have two beverages when you record.
I have three today, but two are canned.
Oh, you do have a bottle of water. That's fine. That's fine. Ralph's got their chelada ready to go, and I am just drinking water today.
Nice.
Well, here we are. We are at the final stop in the Final Destination franchise. I'm glad that this kind of ended on a high note because we're doing two movies today. We're doing The Final Destination, also known as the fourth one, and then Final Destination 5. And I think we all had kind of the same reaction. Like, you saw my review last week before we recorded about three. And I hated it. And I watched it again this morning just to be like, well, maybe. Like, I was like,
four, you mean, right?
Four.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Rewatched it this morning to like take any additional notes because I was looking at my notepad. I was like, man, I really didn't write a lot down this time. And I was like, no, I think I got it the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agree.
But yeah. Thank God five is pretty good. But before we get too far into the episode, we do have a new review from Victoria M. It's like five M's at the end on the podcast. And they write, I've been looking for a podcast that focuses on discussing horror movies in depth, and it's finally here. The hosts offer great recaps, including insights from the DVD commentaries. I'm looking forward to listening back to all the episodes and the upcoming ones as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Victoria. We really appreciate you. And just one quick shout out to someone who's been shouted out on the show before, Michael C. in Vancouver, who messaged us a few weeks ago because he used to drive across the Lionsgate Bridge for work in Vancouver all the time. And that's the one that plays into the opening sequence of Final Destination 5.
That's right.
So probably a very fun kind of film trauma to get when you're having to like drive over that structure all the time. I'm going to like in part six, it's going to like center around a building collapse that's like filmed in my apartment building or something. I'm going to be anxious about it all the time. But what do you think? Should we dive right in to 2009's The Final Destination? Just get this one over with?
I was just about to say, let's get it over with.
Okay, let's do it. Let's start with the trailer.
Hey, how old is this place?
You got me.
We're fine. That's why they built the fence there.
Gonna die,
all
right?
This is
gonna be a crash.
Have you lost your mind? You saw it before it actually happened. We're alive, and so are a lot of other people.
I keep having these visions. I see how the next person was gonna die.
What do you mean, the next person?
Survivors in the accident.
What if we weren't meant to survive? What's gonna happen to us?
I think we can stop it.
Look out!
Coming August 2009.
Wow.
The first entry to be filmed in 3D.
Was it the first?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about this with part three.
I thought three was also done in 3D just because of how cheesy it was. I thought it didn't translate well to a 2D.
Well, that's like, the funny thing about like both this one and five were released in 3D. And like you can tell to like kind of enhance the 3D experience, they put a lot more digital effects of the usual bullshit like flying at the screen throughout these movies, which always like it looks kind of ropey and dumb most of the time. We're gonna have two IMDb plot summaries from Rebecca Swain, mainstay on the show at this point. Do you want to do the first one, Ralph?
Sure. Is that the highlighted one?
Yeah, the orange box.
While watching a car race at McKinley Speedway, Nick O'Bannon has a premonition of a car crash that will result in many casualties, including several people that are in the audience. Nick convinces his girlfriend Lori, along with his friends Hunt and Janet, to leave. A security guard named George Lanter, along with a racist named Carter, a mother and her two sons, and several other people follow Nick out. Shortly after they leave, Nick's premonition comes true. When survivors start dying, Nick, his friends, and George must try to find the remaining survivors and save them from death before it is too late. Rebecca Swain, thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you again. We would not be able to get through this section of the show without you. I think when we first started, we would like try to riff plot summaries, and they would get all like distended and like noodly, like as we like forget stuff, and we'd loop back to stuff, and they would just go on forever. I also think it's funny that this plot synopsis brings up the racist guy, because he is credited as racist. I am noting a little bit of MILF erasure here, because the credit character, their character credited as MILF, was not brought up.
Didn't bother with names for
the mom and her two kids.
Two of the big kills didn't even have names in this. didn't care enough.
But before we get too far, even though that's the second time I've said that, I think I say that twice every episode, because I want to just like jump right in sometimes right after hearing the plot summary. But we're going to do some factoids. So this is directed by David R. Ellis, who is back after directing the second one. So you can probably tell he's got a thing for car crashes. And the car crash at the beginning of this is like mostly pretty well directed and fine. Mm-hmm. The rest of that sequence kind of sucks, I think. And this is written by Eric Bress, who co-wrote Final Destination 2 and the movie Butterfly Effect with J. Mikai Gruber. So we're going to do the numbers game again here. I feel like we're all kind of hating this game because it's so hard. But let me just give you the rundown of where we were at. All three movies up until this one have stated about between $23 and $26 million for budget. The box office, the highest grossing box office return was the last one, the third one, which was just under 119. So who wants to take a crack at the budget first?
I think it has to be less. Because this movie felt so cheap to me. It looked like a step above like a Hallmark film. Like it did not look right. So I'm going to say 20 million.
20. So the lowest budget so far.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to go maybe a little bit higher than that. I'll say 40 million.
Ralph, you're going to be so happy.
Did I win?
It's 40 million.
Whoa. They spent $40 million on this piece of shit.
I was really surprised by that. I think that has to be a byproduct of making it a 3D film.
Oh, that would make sense.
The only thing that I could really think of that would explain that big jump. Because it looks so ropey most of the time. There's like a couple of fun moments, but like the kills like are just kind of for the most part. All right, Ralph, you're going to guess first on the box office return here. So the highest one, like I said, was 119, and that was for the last one.
I'm going to say that it made 60 million.
Okay, so big dip.
Yeah, how long of a difference, or how big of a like time gap was it between 4 and 5?
I think they're all 3 years. Oh no, 2 years between 4 and 5, I think.
Whoa, yes. Really? Okay.
Yes. Because the rest of them are all 3 years apart.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Okay. So I would say, I mean, I would think that this one did poorly. I would say you said 60? 61.
Smart. You're playing the game. Well, technically,
Price is Right rules.
Scott, you technically win on this one, but the box office return is 3 times that.
What?
Whoa. This is the highest grossing one in the franchise so far with a bullet.
Interesting.
You did say so far, so that's a hint for number five.
Well, maybe. I'm not saying if it is or it isn't. This made $187 million at the box office. So this
that's bananas.
Isn't that? Fuck? I don't know what the deal with that is. Like you both talked about how you remember the marketing for part three,
yeah,
being huge.
And I remember the roller coaster marketing.
I didn't quite remember that, but that it helps explain why that one, like, up until now was the highest grossing in the franchise. We're going to have a little bit of the opposite effect here. So our lowest rated film so far, on according to Rotten Tomatoes, is a 36%. That's the first one. The highest rated one so far is 50%. That's the second one. On 99 reviews, Ralph, give me that Rotten Tomatoes score.
33%.
Okay, Scott?
I would so ditto that. 30%. If this is, okay. Wait, which one? What was the first one again?
36.
Okay, yeah, it has to be lower than that. 30%.
I think that's kind of a savvy guess. This is the lowest one so far. So this is 27%.
Oof, at least that was deserved.
A big oof on this one. Yeah. Yeah. This is also, we have two big absences in this film as well. This is the only one in the franchise that doesn't have Tony Todd involved at all. I can't remember what he was filming. I think he was busy working on something else, which,
yeah,
good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He dodged a bullet on that one. It's also the first one that doesn't have Shirley Walker as a composer because she had just passed away.
Oh.
Yeah, her scores for the first three are so good. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of missing that a little bit.
I made a note about the music in this, the soundtrack, I guess, not the composing music. Mm-hmm. The soundtrack in this was fucking awful. So bad.
Well, it does end with one that, Ralph, you had mentioned about a future Final Destination movie just playing AC/DC's Highway to Hell. Yeah. This one does end with an AC/DC song, which I thought was kind of funny. Mercifully, this is the shortest film in the franchise. Just, I think it's just under 82 minutes. It's about 82 minutes.
Oh, damn.
So
it felt longer.
It sure did. It sure fucking did, Ralph.
I thought it was at least an hour and a half.
Yeah. When I looked that up this morning and I was like, no fucking way. I was watching that movie for like 8 hours.
Barely considered long enough to be a movie.
So we've touched on it a little bit, but how do you guys feel about this opening catastrophe and how it stacks up with the other three?
I thought it was decent. It's not one of my favorites. I wanted a little bit more from it. It felt like too much of a buildup. Maybe I had that dream after watching this one, but that it just like took so long to get to the the crash. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It was just sort of it was a little corny, the little details of things that he was noticing. And I don't know.
It didn't have the magic.
Yeah.
It didn't have the fate aspect as much to me. And the only note that I took about it in my little death section on my notes was just NASCAR crash scene. Everyone pretty much crushed. The end. Everyone just pretty much got crushed by something.
Yeah.
The end.
There's like a couple of like kills that are on the right track. Someone mm-hmm. getting like ripped in half by a tire. And then you have mm-hmm. actually like a decent practical effect in that sequence, which is probably one of the only practical effects in this entire sequence. Like someone falls on a spike and it comes out of the camera. Mm. Two people do. Well, one person goes onto a pipe.
Yeah.
Or rebar or something. But then you have like people who are going to be your main characters, like kind of like just get like crushed by a slab of concrete or like, and you just don't see anything. Yep. They just kind of like get smushed out of frame. Mm-hmm. Or like a couple characters just get sort of, they disappear in a cloud of like CGI fire.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, like that's not, it's not very, it just wasn't very interesting.
Mm-hmm. No.
Overall, even though like it is kind of promising for a minute, like the way the cars are actually shot. And we know that David R. Ellis was the stunt coordinator for The Matrix 2. And he knocked the car crash out of the park, so to speak, in Final Destination 2. So like, that's at least one of his skill sets. Maybe give him a final or a Fast and the Furious movie.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
Next or something.
Would watch. 100% would watch. I don't know. The The only thing about the NASCAR scene that kind of got me was, and I say NASCAR, I don't even know if it's NASCAR. What is NASCAR? The racing scene.
Yeah.
It was.
they do cars in NASCAR.
It's like NASCAR. Is it like the NFL? Is that the national?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like, was that a NASCAR race or was it just a professional race?
I think it was a local NASCAR race. I think it's like they're generally the big ones are. Well, I mean, there's a lot of different flavors of racing. Like there's also like the F1 racing, which is very different. And then there's like European leagues.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter for the point of my, anyway, the only thing that got me with that was the look of the stadium that they were in or the viewing arena, the track, mm-hmm. the racetrack. Mm-hmm. It was actually pretty scary how little there was between the people in the stands and the cars. Like in a
chain link fence.
Yeah.
It's funny. Cause one character calls it out. They're like, look, we're going to be fine if there's a crash. There's a fence right there. And then we do see like a cheeky little shot of like death unscrewing the bolts on the fence, which mm-hmm. doesn't really matter ultimately in the crash. It doesn't really play into it at all.
No.
I guess that may imply that the fence would have been enough to stop all these cars and these engine blocks and tires from just flying into the crowd.
Yeah.
But also like the look of that, I think they did film at an actual racetrack for this sequence. And overall, the movie has a very different look in this one because I think this is the only one that's not filmed entirely in BC. I think this one is filmed mostly down in Florida.
Oh. Okay.
So it's got that kind of threw me off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I want my wet, tree-lined cities. Like, it's too bright here.
Yeah.
They're going to pools. What is this?
Gross.
They're sweating.
Just a quick thought here on the opening. This one was actually partially based on a real catastrophe. And I was like, okay, this one happened in 1955. So it's not as like present or tasteless to do it. But this is called the 1955 Le Mans disaster that happened in France. This happened during the 24 hours of Le Mans race, which is still going on today. In that race, there was some confusion about one car pulling into a pit stop and someone pulling out from behind them. And then a car that was much faster than those two cars was like basically driving at top speed and slammed into that vehicle that was pulling out. Mm-hmm. And it sent like just pieces of the cars like and debris like flying into the crowd, and 83 people died.
Whoa.
And 120 people were hurt. Like it was like I couldn't believe it when I was like how have I never heard about this? This is like a pretty shocking catastrophe.
Also, like, wasn't the top speed of a car in the 50s like 73 miles per hour? Could they really go that fast back then? Like, really?
Get them going pretty quick. This was before a lot of speed sort of regulations.
That's
anyway.
Crazy.
Yeah. I was like really, really shocked by that. I was like, oh, I'm glad there's no footage of this out there to tempt me. There's
one
grainy black and white photo of like a car in the air. I'm like, that's enough. I don't need to see this.
Yep. Totally.
So everyone kind of knows the story here. Our leads are Nick and his girlfriend, Lori, right? I kept confusing her name with Janet.
Yeah.
Who try to unravel the mystery and save their friends and maybe a cowboy and a racist guy and a MILF before death comes around to claim them all.
And the security guard.
And the security guard.
Yeah.
The only one that we're actually supposed to like and root for.
He was the only likable character. And like pretty early in the movie, he does get called the N-word, which I was like, you don't need to sprinkle this word into your movie.
Yeah. They kind of took the conceit of Ian from 3 kind of wanting to turn villain.
Shitty guy in there.
Yeah. Just the idea of like someone losing their partner and getting so upset about it that they go on like a murder spree.
Yeah.
That's what they did for the racist in this one. Yeah. He immediately swastika tattoo. Yeah. He immediately was just like, I'm going to murder the black guy because he was there. And I'm mad that my wife is dead.
Set fire to a cross in the guy's front yard.
Yeah. I was like, When I first saw that scene on rewatch, I had totally forgotten about it. Both the scene where he says a slur and the cross burning scene, I'm like, what is this writer doing?
Right? I'm like, what? Yeah.
Like, if you're going to put those images in that language in your movie, for me, I'm like, I think there are valid ways to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think there are valid discussions to be had about it, like in a film, mm-hmm. in the film medium. This was not that film.
No.
And a white person is not the one to have that conversation. Just sort of sprinkling it in to make a villain out of a character in a very quick way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then give us what we want almost immediately by killing him off in the first kill of this movie, which was actually one of the better ones, I think, in this. Because he drives his tow truck up to the security guard's house. He's wasted. He's stumbling as he's getting his cross out of the tow truck. Mm-hmm. He accidentally drops the tow hook.
Yeah.
Which gets caught on his foot and he gets covered in gas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm like forgetting the details as I go here. So the car ends up driving, the chain sparks on the road, and he ends up lit on fire, kind of dragged through the street.
Through the neighborhood.
Yeah. I was like, that's fine.
Yeah. Showing the neighborhood his whole ass.
I think this is probably the only one the only kill worthwhile that was an actual kill. All the other good kills in this ended up being premonitions.
Yeah.
All the good kill scenes ended up not actually happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, let's kind of just keep running through these. Because the premonition, like, it's kind of common for this franchise for people who receive the initial vision to like get other little clues from their environment as the movie goes on, or get other vision, like brief visions, like that was like in two, like she's seeing like the ambulance going into the water and all this.
Yeah.
In this one, the visions are full CG, like 3D spectacles of like hissing snakes.
How it feels to chew 5 gum.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it looks like. Yeah, so it's like leading up to the next kill, which happens at a salon. It's like visions of like big scissors and fan blades, I think, or something like this. Yeah. I can't even remember. I was like, oh my God, these look so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So the second kill here is a setup where the MILF who escaped with her two sons, that she was spotted at the raceway shoving tampons into their ears to drown out the noise.
Mm-hmm.
And the one line I did laugh at in this movie was the dickish character Hunt, who saw that and he says, "That's a lot of tampons for one woman." She's like, pulling four out.
Yeah. How would you know?
It was kind of a bewildered statement. I thought it was funny. She's kind of bitch to the people that work
at the
salon.
She shows up 50 minutes late for her appointment. Yep. They're about to close it. Yep. It's 6:50. They're closing at 7. And she's like, please. And she's getting like
a
full
cut color.
Cut color.
Yeah. Color takes hours. Hours. It's so rude. They wouldn't have scheduled her for one hour before they closed
they would have turned
appointment
her away
anyway. But they would have turned her away at that time also. Yeah, she sucked.
Yeah. They wrote in a few shitty characters in this. Actually, a lot of them are pretty shitty attitudes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're not supposed to feel bad when they get offed. But there's some kind of classic setup in her death here where it's like a lot of misdirection.
Yeah.
And you like you have all these components in motion, and kind of in classic fashion, it comes back to the rock that was thrown in the yard across the street
by her two brats,
by her two bratty
throwing
kids.
Throwing it towards the guy on the lawnmower.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So the rock gets caught up in the lawnmower. She says, I've got my eye on you two. And then the rock goes into her eye. Mm-hmm. And kills her.
You both mentioned the only two notes that I took from the scene. It was the showing up 50 minutes late and then the I've got my eye on you too.
Yeah.
Like yeah. There was too much. It was too clear what was going to happen for this one. as soon as like all the things started to go awry in the studio, I was like, well, then what does The Rock have to do with it? It's not going to mean anything.
Exactly.
And then she ended her haircut and then she turned around and said, I got my eye on you. I was like, oh, well, The Here Rock's comes. About to go through her eye.
Yeah.
And it did.
And it looked kind of dumb.
It looked, it didn't look good.
It just looked kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Then we have our, an investigative scene where our, the rest of our survivors meet up with Nick. And Nick has done a classic thing in the Final Destination series. He's been on his computer looking up mysterious accidents. And he finds out about Flight 180. And then since we don't have Tony Todd in this movie, he has to kind of fill that role where he kind of explains the rules to everybody. And everyone's like, this is dumb. And then they all kind of leave.
Yeah.
So then they try to go save the mechanic. Does he have a name or is he credited as mechanic? He is also credited as mechanic.
Boy.
They go to his shop, Nick and Lori, and they try to explain to him that he's next. And there was a line here that I was like, oh, I think they made a mistake. Because Lori says to him like something like, you've got to listen to us. Three people have died already. Who are the three people? There's only two.
The racist wife, she came out of the race. She's the one that gets hit by the tire.
Yeah.
Oh,
so she technically is the first one. She just happens immediately.
Yeah. Okay. I'm surprised that one counts because she died in the same accident.
I would assume that's what.
Yeah. Right.
I would assume
this are very confusing.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you more questions about this when George and Nick team up and go to try to save the cowboy guy because they like run down the rules. We'll get there. And then they're talking. So they're in this sequence explaining to this guy at the mechanic shop that he's next and he should look out. And of course, a car rolls down the driveway and squishes him through a very sharp looking fence, kind of like.
Sort of. The car almost hits him, but then. A tank of pressured gas gets opened and
rockets
it shoots
out
at him and he gets squished through the chain.
He gets pushed through by the air tank or whatever.
Yeah, like those old Play-Doh toys.
he comes
out in a perfect star shape.
Yeah. Exactly. A
bunch of noodles.
That's in 3D at you, at the viewer.
Yeah, I was like, at least they're trying a little bit with this one. Yeah. It's kind of, a lot of these are kind of like very perfunctory. They're like going through the motions, but they're just like, they're just not that.
There's no heart in it.
Yeah, like, they're just not that interesting.
Yeah, it wasn't interesting. And as soon as, I mean, I think all of us probably had the same reaction. As soon as we saw that chain link, the fence that he ended up pushed up against.
I don't know what kind of fence that was.
That was not a real fence.
No.
Those don't exist in the world. But as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, well, he's getting pushed through that. We're going to do Resident Evil. Like, he's just going to get chopped into little squares.
Because
like,
this is a first viewing for you.
Yeah, this was my first viewing.
When I saw the fence on my rewatch, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I remember how this goes down. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like you've been kind of picking up on how they're going to go pretty well so far, though. So then there's confusion about who's next, since it's Hunt and Janet that got crushed. They were the ones that were crushed, right?
I think so, yeah.
So for some reason, Nick and Lori go back to the racetrack to look for clues to try to jog his memory.
3 days after the horrific accident, there's still blood on the ground. Of course, you can just waltz in with a flashlight.
It was so silly because, like, of course he's getting like premonitions, which I would call those clues, and probably would help jog your memory.
Mm-hmm.
But the only reason they go back to the racetrack is so they can have a reason to like meet up with George.
Yes,
because they like don't know him, right?
Yeah, they had to bring him back in somehow. And that was because he, after, you know, surviving a horrific crash at his work site, goes back to work.
Yes.
3 days later as the night guard.
Two people
the
immediately
singular night
in.
Guard.
Just these two doofuses just walk right in. So then they go to track down Hunt. They split up to track down Hunt and Janet. Hunt is a dickhead, so he's like, if I'm gonna die, I might as well live. I'm gonna go get pussy. So he goes to the country club to get pussy at the pool.
in like a little cabana right next to the pool where it's clearly a family
yeah.
pool.
After that sex scene, it's really funny because she like storms out because she's mad at him.
Yeah.
And like she walks out and she's like still doing her top. Like,
yeah, she's still yeah. she's putting her clothes on, walking
like outside of the
into
pool.
The
yeah.
pool area. You got some titties in it, though.
Uh-huh.
We had one set.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, Janet is going through a car wash. So then these two characters both get stuck at the same time. Hunt inadvertently triggers the pool drain and then drops his lucky coin into the water and dives in to get it. His butthole gets stuck on the pool drain, which I'll just bring up Chuck Palahniuk's guts right now.
One more time.
That is what happens in that short story.
Yep. Everybody go read the short story. It's better than this.
Yes. So that's how he dies. Nick arrives just in time to see his like guts like fly out of the pump.
Yeah.
Which was kind of fine. Yeah. I was like,
it could have been so much better though.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no, that one doesn't really have a lot of buildup to it. Like yeah. there's no like misdirection even in it. Like you were talking about like how like the first thing you see is going to be the last thing you see kind of mm-hmm. in these setups. And it's like the moment he like drops the toy gun on the pool drain turning on, it's like kind of like, oh yeah, like,
well, that one I don't remember any kind of misdirection in that one.
There's none.
It was just the only thing that happened. And I guess the only decent part about that scene was when his like chest like concaved. It's like, okay, that's really the only graphic thing, because otherwise it's just some water with some blood in it.
Mm-hmm. It would have been fun if there was like an under the skin kind of thing where you just suddenly like he just turns into like a skin bag.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Something ridiculous. Yeah. Might as well.
Right? Or him like pulling away from the drain and like his intestines being sucked into it or something.
Yeah.
That was probably a little too graphic for this movie, but like, you know, something.
So then at the same time, Janet's head gets stuck in her sunroof as she's going through the car wash, and her car, because her car is filling with water.
Yeah. Yeah. Pipe bursts. So it's just dumping water into yeah. her open yeah. sunroof.
It's almost full. And she's about to get pushed through the spinny brush at the end, which we're, I guess, supposed to assume would kill her.
Sure.
Which I think you would be fine.
I also think you would be fine.
You might get a little bruise on your forehead or something.
Yeah. I tried to find it, but I saw on Twitter someone posted a video of a car wash. And it was, I don't remember where it was, but there was a big brush at the end that kind of goes all the way over your car to kind of like dry it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this like stray dog that had run up to it and just put its butt up on it.
So I've seen that video. Yeah. Just getting some butt scratches from, yeah. from the like, car
yeah,
wash.
It's like, it'd be fine. But Janet gets saved by Lori and George. And then everyone assumes that it's over at this point.
Yes.
I'm trying
yes.
to remember where there's like a scene too where like, or maybe no, it's just Lori that saves Janet, because after that, don't they go to find George and he's like trying to kill himself?
Yeah.
Yeah. We get a return of that kind of idea where he's like trying to hang himself or eat pills.
Yeah. It makes more sense that it's like, okay, I get it now with that, the previous movie where the guy tried to shoot himself. It's like, okay, that wasn't the order. He wasn't next. He had to wait, so that death wasn't going to let him do that.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it, when they realize that he can't die at that moment, they come to the stupidest possible conclusion, which is that death's game is over.
It's over.
it's like no, like if that were true, I mean, eating all those pills or hanging yourself probably would have worked.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, oh, I'm just coincidentally invincible. so therefore the game is over. So they have some champagne to celebrate. And then shortly thereafter, Janet and Lori go to see a movie in 3D
mm-hmm.
called Love Lays Dying. Not related to the new Rose Glass film called Love Lies Bleeding. And when they're at the movie theater, Nick realizes that the cowboy that sat in front of them survived and was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And that's why George couldn't kill himself, because the cowboy was actually next.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So then Nick and George go to the hospital, and they're talking in the elevator about the rules of the order
in front of like
an elevator full of doctors and nurses. Yeah. Now, what is the explanation here exactly? Is it?
I wrote down the phrase, "Through action, others are saved." So I think that was sort of like, if you, I think the idea was maybe if you can save somebody, it will reset it or disrupt it.
Because we don't see the cowboy leaving. Their only interaction is they ask him to move seats because of his
very tall hat.
Very tall hat. And he's like, much blood or whatever. I don't know what a cowboy says. Yeehaw.
Probably something like, sure thing, little lady.
Jingle, you hear his spurs jingling. He drives like an Acura. that apparently was not, that was conveniently for death, not part of Nick's visions at all.
I guess, yeah.
So the we see as they're trying to track down the cowboy in the hospital that the cowboy is bedridden, hooked up to like IVs and stuff, and on the floor above him, an old man is about to be loaded into a bathtub by a nurse, and he says a bunch of racist shit to the nurse, which is cool that we're getting more of that. The tub overflows, and just as our other two heroes arrive at the cowboy's room, the tub breaks through the ceiling and crushes him.
Crushes cowboy.
This one
Dan.
Is stupid.
This one is stupid. And also, there's no retribution for our second racist.
I know. I was hoping.
What is this story telling us here?
Well, they got one of the racists.
Yeah. We liked the second one enough, though. That's what we're supposed to take away from this.
Well, he's in the hospital.
Maybe because he's probably old.
His punishment is he does not get to take a bath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's some, these crummy kills kind of come hard and fast here. George and Nick are walking out of the hospital and they're crossing the, what do you call that? The ramp that pulls up that like loops around in front of the hospital. The loopy rampy
thing. Emergency drop off.
Yeah, the drop off.
The ambulance pulls up or the cars pull up.
Yeah.
And as they're crossing the street, they're very calmly, insouciantly chatting to one another. And in mid-sentence, George is creamed by an ambulance that is going 90 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It was clearly not
going to
stop.
To where? Yeah. Where was this ambulance going?
No siren, no lights flashing.
Oh, shit. This is my stop.
Yeah. I don't think ambulances just hang around at the hospital until there's a call. I think they go and they roam around and, like, you know,
they
space
roam
out
around
in the city. Do ambulances just hang out at hospitals?
I think so. Or they're dispatched.
I don't know. I see
stations.
Them hanging out in like 7-Eleven parking lots and shit.
They
they just sort of
around
like,
in case.
So
really
they're closer
it.
Than, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not an EMT.
Yeah.
Me neither.
So they were trying to do the gets hit by a bus thing,
yep.
And it was not successful
nope,
in
yeah.
this.
It's not nearly as good as the,
like,
the first one.
I've been having deja vu.
Yeah, that's what it was. Very unceremonious ending that had none of the Rube Goldberg stuff in it.
Nope.
Yeah, so many of these kills are just devoid of that.
Yeah.
At that moment, Nick gets another series of very stupid-looking CGI visions, and he realizes that Janet and Lori are in danger at the 3D screening of Lovelace Dying. So he races to the mall, which is also a construction site.
The theaters, some of the theaters are actually under construction.
Yes, there's construction going on like behind the screen.
Yeah.
And it's like 15 construction workers back there running saws and power tools behind a movie theater screen.
Yeah.
And there's a really funny shot when they like, they first show you the construction site. You kind of zoom in on this guy using a nail gun, and he's holding like two chunks of 2x4 that are about a foot long together, and he's like, you watch him put like a dozen nails. They're not even like lined up right. I'm like, what is he doing?
It's like that scene from, I think it's like the MTV Awards or something, with the Pussycat Dolls, where they're like out on the like truck thing, like, and they're in their construction outfits, and they're like, one girl's pretending to hammer the tire truck or something, truck tire, and it's just like funny, like, yeah, you guys are really doing a lot here.
Not it was very much miming. That
yeah. You don't know this scene? Oh man, I'm gonna have to show it.
I don't
to
know
you.
This clip.
I'll have to show you the clip. It's hilarious.
We'll take a break before we get into 5. So let's see, where are we at?
Nick at the movie theater.
Oh yeah. Nick arrives at the movie theater. He knows they're going to see Love Lays Dying. And he gets up to the marquee or whatever, the electronic marquee that's showing all the theaters and movie times. And he's like, God damn it, basically, because this movie is showing in 9 different theaters at the same time.
And completely sold out. Not a seat in the theater. It's when
like,
we see
this
it.
Would have to be like this would be like Dune 2 opening weekend. Like,
yes,
like this is the most popular movie in the country
ever,
maybe ever. Yeah. This is a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah,
and like it's so funny because like the theater times like on the two screens like on the different screens, like a lot of them are playing at the exact same time. So it's like 3 like showings at noon that are all yeah. sold out. Mm-hmm. It's like 15,000 people are there to see Love Lays Dying today. And it's also playing up against a movie called Alibi, which is shown on 2 screens. And then just one movie that gets cut off because all it says is Summer of.
I love that these are the points that you wanted. You wrote down.
I rewound it. I screenshotted it.
I paused it when they were showing some of the other movie really? Posters. There's one called Death Fist. And then there's one called Saving Little Christina.
I noticed that
Shut
one.
Up. That's the one I want to go see.
There was one I didn't rewind to. It's like The Z Matrix or something. It was something very stupid.
A lot of those Seinfeld kind of movie titles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So Nick figures out what theater they're in, and he realizes that on a construction site, some sawdust is about to catch on fire, and all of these barrels of explosive chemicals that are behind the movie theater screen are going to blow up. So Death tries to stop him by firing off a nail gun and nailing his arm to a wall, but he's too clever.
Well,
what am I missing?
Is that in the first part of the
That's what actually happens.
That's what actually happens.
Oh, I'm skipping ahead.
You're skipping ahead.
So he goes into the theater and he gets his girlfriend, whichever, I can't remember which one it is.
That's Lori.
Gets her to leave.
You're right.
Janet's
I'm mixing up the two scenes.
Yeah, Janet's like, you're not getting me out of Love Lays Dying.
Janet is suddenly very ungrateful that Lori saved her life less than 24 hours ago. Yeah. Yeah. She's like, you're being an annoying bitch.
Yeah. And so as they're
trying
leaving,
to watch my movie and eat my snacks.
Yeah. As they're leaving, the explosion behind the screen happens as there's an explosion happening in the movie.
Yeah.
With their watching. 3D glasses on.
See, that's supposed to be what it's like watching this movie
meta.
In 3D.
It's meta. So meta.
It was meta in a stupid
experience.
Way. Yes. The screen actually explodes experience. And nails go into your face.
And then they're, I forgot his name. Nick.
Nick and Lori.
Nick and Lori are like flown out of the exit of the theater onto the escalators.
Mm-hmm.
And then it
A
breaks
big post
in half.
Falls down and breaks the escalator
and
in
then
half.
Lori gets sucked into the escalator and crushed.
Yeah, that kill was actually a little bit more fun. Like, because the gore was kind of a little bit almost comical. Like when you see her like floppy little body running through the gears. I was like,
that's the under the skin like meat sack that you were talking about earlier,
it's
Sam.
It's more fun to watch than like because like so many of the kills like have like no practical effects in them at all. Like we just saw a kill where like a bunch of digital nails like fly at the screen and then like someone's like, oh, you see him kind of like poke her. It's like, okay. This was at least
this is the only one that actually kind of has a fear for me. Like that happened. There was a woman who did get sucked into an escalator and pass away, and it's actually horrifying to think about. So I would actually be scared of that. I've seen like videos of escalators like stopping working and just like the weight of the people making it slide down. And so people are just getting crushed at the bottom of it by all the other people landing on top of them. Like that kind of stuff is really scary.
Yeah. I avoid taking the, even though people are like, oh, if the escalator stops working, it's still a staircase. I'm like, that like, that makes me nervous. More than it's gonna just fall, like
one little cog and it's like
I'll take the actual stairs.
Yeah. Well, even that this sequence opens with Lori's shoelace getting stuck, which has happened to me.
I the only other quote that I wrote down from this movie was something that she said about those sneakers. Do you either of you remember when they're walking out of the store?
They're like,
she was like, I got them.
They look very functional.
She was like, I bought them for Nick. He likes me in sneaks.
Oh yeah, there it is.
Oh my God. I totally missed that.
I was like, what the fuck are these two girls talking about?
Nick has a shoe. He's got a foot fetish thing.
Sneaker fetish. Oh, like,
let me smell those stinky shoes.
Ugh. So do we see Nick die in this part of the movie?
I don't think so.
Nope. I didn't think so.
It goes, the camera zooms into his eyeball and then back out, and we're right back out at the front of the hospital where the security guard, and George, the security guard, immediately gets hit again.
Yeah, they killed him twice. The one like sympathetic character in this fucking movie.
Like, Nick has like one moment where he like trying to say like, George, look out. Yeah. But it's like you waited till the end of that entire vision to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
like what was happening? Like, were they just crossing the street and then like Nick he just kind of stops and his eyes roll back at his head for 8 minutes?
It makes sense. I mentioned it when we watched two, and it makes sense that this is the same director. It's a That's So Raven. Zoom into his eyeballs. We're getting the premonition. And then like once it's done, you have to watch it in real time. And then once the premonition is done and you've been standing there for 5 minutes, you blink out of it and there you're back again. It's like wild.
Yeah. So in the real world, this is where Nick gets back to the construction site. Nail gun shoots his arm into a wall. He's able to grab a stick and set off the fire alarm before the fire extinguisher system.
Yeah.
Before the corrosive, explosive chemicals can light on fire and blow up at this noon screening of, I can't say the name of this movie because of Love Lies Bleeding. Love Lies Dying.
You have to look at your sheet every single time you bring it up.
And everyone is saved. Nick is a hero. And then we cut to 2 weeks later, and Nick, Laurie, and Janet are at a cafe getting coffee, talking about maybe going to Paris, which is a clue. They sit down at a table near the window, and Nick's like, you know what? Maybe it was death's plan all along that we're sitting here. And then all three of them are killed by a random semi truck that crashes through the front of the store. And then we go into X-ray vision as we watch all their like skulls get crushed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very stupid.
And then the AC/DC song.
And then the AC/DC song kicks in.
Closes it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one is really bad.
Yeah. I like it a little bit more after talking with y'all about it.
It's more fun to talk about than
I think
it was
if
to
we
watch.
Were watching it together in like a party environment, it would be a lot more fun to witness. But actually sitting down and trying to pay attention to this was a drag.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing with like horror in general, but movies like these kind of like splatter gore, like semi-comedic like subgenre films, like they're a lot more fun to watch with people most of the time.
Yeah.
Even though I do get a lot of like Final Destination 1 and Final Destination 5 we're going to get into are like they have a little bit more of like a dark mystery to them. Like those work great if you're just looking to pop on something kind of spooky when you're at home. But like these middle three I think benefit well from watching with people in general, especially when you're trying to get through this one.
Yeah. Yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, any final thoughts on the final destination?
I mean, we already discussed it, but we had a diminished return for titties in this one.
Oh yeah,
one pair.
Yeah, you were hoping for eight
from
in
the
this one.
Cabana.
Oh yeah, you wanted it. Yeah, you wanted eight.
And then we ended up in the new one having 32.
Yeah,
like if they keep doubling.
Yeah, like yeah.
It would be funny if there was like squared. If there were 32 bare breasts in part six, but only like four complete pairs. Just like the writing is like really weird. Just trying to find reasons for one boob to pop out.
It's like this one or two characters just specifically keep getting topless.
Yes, yeah. It's like some one of the main characters works at like operates a mammograph machine or something.
I mean, it'd be like the Doobie Brothers or whatever, where the claim to fame was the number of car crashes they had. Or what is it?
The Blues Brothers.
The Boobie Brothers. The Blues Brothers?
Yeah, that's in the Blues Brothers. And
the Doobie Brothers what are the band.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Blues Brothers, where it's just cop cars.
Cop cars just crashing. And then they made the second one and had one extra car crash that they could up themselves. Yeah. That's what it would be like if we had the number of boobies that you wanted.
Yeah. It's the only funny part of Blues Brothers 2000, which is one of the worst movies I have seen.
Awful.
I haven't seen any of
them. Entire life. I watched that as like, let's watch something really fucking stupid. Like it's going to come up on a podcast that I listen to. Let's just watch this dumbass movie. And I swear to God, I checked the runtime that was left in it because I was like, this has to be almost done. And I've never felt physical pain like that watching a movie before. Because I was only 45 minutes into it and I had over an hour left and I was like, I could feel my heart like sink into my shoes. I hated it so much.
It's unnecessarily long.
Yeah, it's way too long.
I'd say the only closing remark I have on this one is that there was an extremely large amount of collateral damage in this that doesn't take place in other movies. So many other people were killed would have been killed to off the main people. Like the explosion in the movie theater would have killed hundreds of other people. The pandemonium that took place in the mall where people are like being thrown off the escalators and things, like hundreds of other people would have died just to get rid of Lori, you know, like that. And that didn't seem like what the other ones were about. So that felt a little off to me in this one thematically.
Yeah.
Well, do we have a favorite kill in this one? Most of the ones in the back half are pretty dull. Like even the like theater one, which is supposed to be the big set piece, is just kind of like, eh, they blow up.
Yeah.
I would say either I liked the escalator. I do think the first one is the one I enjoyed the most. It's like the funniest one. And it's like the most like contraption-y kind of one in here.
The first one being
the racist guy. Not the woman getting hit with the tire. Although that one probably has the best practical effect in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of these are just kind
of. Yeah. Fun. I didn't like any of them. Yeah. I'm not even going to pick a favorite. Okay. I didn't like any of them.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Before we go on to take a quick break and get into Final Destination 5, what's your double feature choice for this one? Are you guys ready?
Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
Okay, Ralph, you go.
Joyride 2, Dead Ahead.
Okay.
It also stars Nick Zano, who played Hunt.
Oh, fun. Good catch.
Yeah.
I think he's the one with the...
That.
Oh, God.
So what?
He was one of the hunks in that?
In...
Joyride 2? Yes. I remember that being full of hunks. Yeah. Yes.
He was the only one that I recognized. He has actually, I think, had a pretty big career. A lot of TV stuff. A lot of credits for that guy.
I want to say he's on like some CW type shows or something.
Yeah,
like
I think when I saw him, I was like, oh yeah, that guy. Mm-hmm. He's in some stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm going to pair this with the psychological slasher film, Anguish.
Ooh.
Okay.
Which it takes place largely inside of a theater. That's what I'll give you. It stars Michael Lerner and, oh goodness, I'm spacing her name right now.
Zelda
Rubinstein.
Steen, excuse me.
Yes. Who is a gay icon. We stan.
We do.
RIP to both of them. They're both amazing. So check out Anguish. That's a really unnecessarily good little slasher movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of was on the same mind as you, Ralph, and I didn't choose Joyride, but I did choose Rubber.
Oh, fun.
I'm sorry. I got ahead of you.
Oh, no, it's fine. I don't care what order we do it in. Rubber about the tire, the homicidal car tire, truck tire.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's great. It's super fun.
Yeah. Quentin Dupieux. Yeah, definitely check that one out.
It is 1 minute longer, I think, than this movie.
Perfect. At least that premise, like, probably deserves about 83 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it for the Final Destination 2009. We're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to be back for Final Destination 5.
All right.
Don't go anywhere. All right, we are back to talk about Final Destination 5. This is our final stop in the Final Destination franchise. I'm very excited. This was also a lot less work than the Saw franchise or the Wrong Turn franchise, mostly because there are two fewer films in this than the Wrong Turn franchise and half as many films as the Saw franchise.
And only one bad one.
And only one bad one, exactly. Yeah,
this was enjoyable. This is much more enjoyable for me than Wrong Turn, and I'm glad I didn't do Saw with y'all.
I would do it again every year.
I see that it's been quite a while since your first consultation. What made you decide to take the leap today?
A lot is going on in my life. I don't want to miss anything.
When we're done, you'll have perfect vision. Hey, do you know what? My assistant's given me an incomplete file. I'll be right back.
Hold on, you're leaving? Supposed to be happening?
You're not supposed to be here. You were supposed to die on that bridge. A lucky few survive the disaster. And then one by one, death comes for them all.
Are you saying that we can't stop this?
There's an answer for everything.
It's kill or be killed.
Nobody's safe!
Oh my God!
All right, so Final Destination 5 from 2011. Some factoids here. This is directed by a man named Stephen Quayle. He mostly has worked, his most notable projects have been him working in various capacities with James Cameron. So he worked as, like, I don't even know exactly what these credits mean, but a production assistant, I kind of get, special projects and special projects coordinator. For The Abyss, Terminator 2, and True Lies. And he was also the second unit director for Titanic and Avatar. So,
cool. Yeah. That's wow. Those are some big movies. Yeah. I've heard of all of those.
Yeah, those are huge movies.
I think I can say I've seen them all.
Yeah, so I did see that he was working on... I know most of, or a lot of, Avatar was filmed in New Zealand. So he was down there. I wondered if that means like some crew that he worked with ended up working on X. Cause I know a lot of the film crew for Avatar, like when things were getting like reworked as that film like took a billion years to make, like they weren't doing anything. So a lot of them flew out to the set of X and worked on that film.
Cool.
Yeah. This is written by Ari Heiserer. Who's directed a few movies y'all might have heard of. 2010's remake of A Nightmare on Elm Street. 2011's The Thing prequel. He wrote Lights Out. He wrote Arrival, the Denis Villeneuve one, which I was like, damn, man. And then he wrote Bird Box.
Oh.
And then he wrote the one of the first big budget movies that came out during the COVID-19 pandemic, which is a 2020 Vin Diesel movie called Bloodshot. Which is,
I've not heard of that.
I haven't either.
Oh, I watched it in lockdown. It's really dumb, but not a bad time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah,
not a bad time. Vin Diesel is really bad in that movie.
But it's like bad in a bad way or bad in a good way?
No, bad.
I have like, I have like a love hate with him where I'm like, you're bad, but also I love you.
I kind of do too. Like he, yeah. Like in the final or. The Final Destination.
Furious.
The Fast and Furious movies. Like most of the time I'm like, you're the right tool for this job.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Even though it seems like a lot of people really hate working with you.
Yeah. The word is he's not great to work with. That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah. So the last movie, $40 million budget, $187 million at the box office. Budget guess. Wait, who did I make guess first on the budget?
You made me guess first.
You guessed first. So, Scott, you're going to start. What is the budget for Final Destination 5?
This one was also in 3D?
Yes.
$42 million.
Okay.
I'm going to say $50
million. Okay. They didn't mix it up this time. They kept it at 40.
Just 40. Okay.
Just 45.
Okay.
Nice. All right. Much better use of the money this time.
I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. this one, box office budget, or box office budget, box office return, Ralph.
What did we say for the last one?
The last one was huge. It was $187 million.
Okay. I'm going to say a little bit less. I'm going to say a little bit less. So $150 million.
Okay.
It pains me to agree with you on this, Ralph, because I can't imagine that number four was the highest grossing in this franchise, but I think it probably is because they didn't make another one. So I'm going to say 120.
157.9.
Wow.
Yeah. You're coming back at the end of the guess.
Yeah. I finally figured it out.
We don't keep track of points for this at all, actually. Yeah. So another big hit. So I am kind of surprised that it's taken them this long to get back around to the franchise.
Yeah, it's a yeah. bona fide money maker.
Money.
Money. Oh. Oh.
That's what the movie did.
Yeah. No, I'm surprised. Like, they should have made more.
Yeah, I agree. And this was 2011. It's going to be 14 years that they waited to do another one.
By the time the next one comes out. And it's not, I mean, I hope it does well, but I feel like the momentum's gone at this point.
Yeah, I bet a lot of people are going to be excited about it for sure, but I don't think it's going to put up anywhere near those numbers, no matter how good it is.
No, yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I think for a kind of, I guess you could call this kind of a legacy franchise at this point, but I'm guessing the budget's going to go way down and they're going to try to just cash in on the name recognition and save some money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely not going to be in 3D.
No.
I support that. I would go see a 4D though.
So Rotten Tomatoes here. I will give you a hint. This is the highest rated one in the franchise.
Not surprised by that.
See, Ralph, you got the last two right. So, Scott, I'm going to make you guess first.
Okay. I'll say you said this is the highest, and the highest we've had so far is
50%.
I'm going to say this is 62%.
Okay.
I'm going to say
higher or lower.
I'm going to go 70%.
You're in the right direction, but you were pretty close. It's 63%.
63.
So okay. It is getting the full red tomato on Rotten Tomatoes, and that's on 136 reviews. So the most reviews in the franchise too. I feel like with a horror franchise, the more mainstream critics get their eyeballs on it, that kind of suppresses the overall score a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We have another Rebecca Swain plot summary here. Scott, would you do us the honors?
I will. While on a business retreat, Sam has a premonition that he, his coworkers, boss, and several other people will die in a horrific bridge collapse. When his premonition ends, he tries to make everyone get off the bus. Only some of his coworkers, along with his boss, leave. Shortly after, the bridge collapses. Everyone thinks that they are safe until the survivors start dying. It is now up to Sam to try and find a way to prevent anyone else from dying before it is too late. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, Rebecca, as always.
All of these reviews are basically the same thing. It's minus the identical. Like the beginning, like what's happening.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of glad we're recording this week after the bridge collapse, that tragic bridge collapse that just happened. This is the only time I'm going to bring it up.
Yeah.
It's just a coincidence that these things are happening at the same time. I'm sure.
Yes. So,
this movie is also partially based on a real bridge collapse, which is, this is a little hometown flavor.
I brought it up in my notes. I wasn't sure if that's what it was inspired by.
Curious if anyone was going to talk about it.
Yeah, the Tacoma Narrows Bridge collapse of 1940. Mm-hmm. If you're not familiar with this one, you may have seen the clip of that suspension bridge like waving in the wind. Like it had this weird enharmonic situation with the structure and the wind that was going through there, that
like
caused
it was a ribbon dancer.
It's
gnarly.
Yeah, you should look it up. It's pretty unreal to see. And as far as I know, no human died on that one.
Yeah, I don't believe so. I think there was a dog that was left in one of the cars, because they thankfully, I think they noticed that it was so windy. It was the wind, right?
Yeah.
That it was the way it was twisting and turning, everybody got out of their cars and off the bridge. But yeah, they left a dog in one of their, I believe.
Yeah. The person who was the owner of the dog, I think he was a local newspaper editor, was what I was reading. I was trying to refresh my memory pretty quick before we met up today. As he was getting off the bridge, like the oscillations got like more intense, and he had to like crawl on that for like the last like 500 yards or something.
Whoa.
Like he was like not able to stand up and walk on it. But thankfully the injuries that came out of that were minor.
Yeah. And then they ended up repairing the bridge and accounting for something like this in the future.
I have been on it, and every time I'm on it, I think about it. So, office employees in a charter bus, bridge collapses. You know the idea here. Mm-hmm. How did we like this intro sequence, especially coming from part four here?
This one was fun for me. I think the bridge collapsing scene was long enough, and everyone's deaths were at least somewhat varied in a way that made it a little more interesting.
Yeah.
I could not believe that anybody that fell off the bridge survived hitting the water, but some of them did.
Yeah.
And then were crushed by cars or whatever.
I kind of like the detail that you see a few people.
Yeah. Otherwise, it would just be people falling off a bridge, and that would have been boring. That would have been like being crushed at a NASCAR race. So I think it was interesting enough. And there was some action elements in this where, you know, they had to, I think the main character's ex-girlfriend, recent girlfriend, whatever, she actually survives by like precariously crawling across a beam or whatever. And so there's some action elements that made it a lot more dynamic and interesting.
It's really exciting. Mm-hmm. And I think I've seen this factoid around about this opening, that this is the longest intro sequence in the franchise, and deservedly so. It's probably the most complicated in terms of how they filmed it. Like a lot of these things are filmed, there's obviously a lot of CGI again in this one, and there's a lot of like green screen situations where they built like different parts of the bridge. Like when Olivia is like climbing across like that I-beam, like she's actually doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
cool.
There's a lot of little things like that where people are being suspended on like the railing, stuff like this.
Yeah.
And it composites together like really well. It's like genuinely very exciting.
Yeah.
I really love this intro.
I really liked this one a lot, especially in regards to what happens after they come out of the premonition and they're actually escaping. All the previous movies, maybe the first one is, you know, can get away with this, but the other ones, once the premonition happens, we don't really see it. It just happens so fast. We just kind of see, like, the second one, we kind of see the pilot.
You kind of, like, hear it.
Yeah,
like,
the third one especially, like, we don't, we just see them turn around and we hear this loud, crash.
Yeah, we see Mary and that's it. Winston go, no,
and then even
Jason!
The previous one, like, we do kind of see a little bit of, like, flames and chaos inside, but then, and then we get that wheel, but this one, like, we get to actually see the bridge collapse again.
Yeah.
As they're standing, like, watching it. And it's really fun. And it's terrifying because it's, again, a very realistic kind of thing that could happen to people. Maybe more realistic than, you know, not that it doesn't happen at those NASCAR racing events, but, like,
yeah,
you know, not everybody's. That's kind of a specific hobby or interest versus traveling.
Yeah,
you
know, and
you have to go over this bridge to,
like, that's something that we've talked about before in this franchise. It's like some of the better kill sequences or openings are about anxieties that, like, you would feel in your life at least a time or two. Mm-hmm. And, like, this is certainly one of them. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I think I texted both of y'all this. I realized that the filming location for this bridge is in Vancouver, and I have been on that bridge and I have been stuck in traffic on that bridge.
Oh, God.
And it was almost exactly a year ago from the day that I watched this, that I was on that bridge. Cause I was on a trip in Vancouver and we went north to go to another set of bridges. I think it's called the Capilano Suspension Bridge Park that we went hiking at. And you have to cross the bridge where this movie was filmed, where the scene was filmed, or at least based on. I don't know if they actually, whatever. The external shots that they used of the bridge is the bridge in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And so it's a major bridge that I think a lot of people have to do for their daily commute. It's like,
yes, they do.
How you get into downtown Vancouver, I think. So probably we've all been on it at some point.
Now, I have a clarifying question for my own benefit here. Everyone on that bridge or on that in that bus, they all work at the same company. Does our main character, does Sam also work there?
Yeah.
Yes.
See, they're the, like, office people from the factory, because one of the factory, like, union bosses or foundry boss is also on the retreat.
Yeah.
I kept asking, like, what is their job?
What is this company?
It's Dunder Mifflin.
It's
Dunder Mifflin.
I was like, are they at the office?
It's the office. They sell paper, and there's like
the paper factory that looks like a steel mill.
Right. Yeah.
Underneath, like, this stupid looking office building.
Yeah, that's right. They made paper, right? I'm not misremembering that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure they were selling paper, and that's why I made the Dunder Mifflin connection.
Which is kind of funny because David Koechner, I don't know how to say his name, who plays their boss, he was also in The Office.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't, when you finally see their office and, like, their factory downtown or beneath it, I was like, this is so stupid looking. Like, just this steamy basement.
Yeah.
So, you know the deal. Our main character and his girlfriend are the investigative element of this film. And people start getting picked off one by one. There's also a funny moment. There's like a vigil for the people that die. And there's just a brief shot of like a local news reporter standing outside. And she's in the middle of her report. And she says, like, the eight survivors are called the Lucky Eight or something like this. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, but these lucky employees may now face an uncertain future. I was like,
what?
What is she talking about?
Maybe because all of the coworkers are dead, so maybe they're like, you're going to lose your jobs.
Which does
your
come into the movie later.
Yeah.
Which even still, if that's what, I'm assuming that's the only thing that would make sense, unless she's like, actually saying, like, I think they're going to get picked off one by one. It's still kind of a shitty thing to bring up as you're, like, reporting on this memorial service. So the kills start coming.
And they don't stop coming.
I'm not dropping in that music cue here. We get a banger to start this movie off. We have, what's his name? The guy that's not...
Peter.
Yes, Peter.
And his girlfriend, Candace.
I kept thinking he was Dave Franco.
He's got some very...
He looks very similar.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, similar.
So Peter and Candace. Candace is a gymnast. Peter goes to see her at gymnastics practice, and we get this incredible sequence.
It's so good. They're really having fun with it.
Yeah, I think this might be my favorite one in the franchise. It's like way up there for me. I'd have a hard time picking one that I like more than this because it's so ridiculous and the buildup is so good. It has everything I want from a Kill set piece in this franchise at this point. Mm-hmm. How did you like it, Scott?
You're talking about the gymnastics.
The gymnastics death.
I have a very real fear of stepping on screws and nails, and it was extremely tension filled for me watching them on the balance beam with this this nail or a screw that they're all narrowly missing.
Yes, they're just teasing you with this image.
Yeah, yeah. And then the complete redirect or misdirect from that to where she just falls off the high beam and scorpions herself. Like,
yes, she falls off the parallel bars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The person on the beam knocks over the bowl of chalk and it hits mm-hmm. the fan and goes over to the uneven bars where
it blows in her
eyes. Yeah, and she loses control. It reminded me of this video of a gymnast, Olga Korbut. I'm probably pronouncing her name wrong. At the 1972 Olympics in Munich, she did what is now a banned move called the dead loop or death loop. She nails it. She doesn't get hurt.
Oh, okay, good.
But you should YouTube it or find it on the internet. It's so quick, but it's like, it's such a complicated move. And it sort of reminded me of that, of this scene where she just
say her name one more time for the crowd.
Olga Korbut, Korbut.
Okay.
But yeah, she slams into the floor.
Are you going to pull that up for us, Scott?
In the movie, not in real life.
Also, I realized that we didn't watch the trailer, but I am going to drop it in earlier. So
okay, cool.
Let's watch this gymnastics accident really quick.
It's not an accident.
Oh.
No.
She's fine.
Yeah, she's fine. It's just a move. It's so quick. It's the first 10 seconds here.
Okay.
I actually have seen this.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So she gets,
when she gets,
was.
She'll stand up on this part and this is where it starts.
Whoa. Whoa.
There.
Yeah.
That's it right there. Where that backwards, flinging you to hold the,
all
the
of my hot organs would be crushed.
Yeah.
Yes.
But anyway, they banned that move because it's probably very, very dangerous. And something like this would happen. What we see Candace experience. Yeah.
Well, I was wondering I really like that they don't cut around this death. You watch her fly off the beam and then her body folds in half backwards and her spine and her femur are
sticking out of jello. It's toothpicks.
I love that someone runs over and it's like, don't move her.
Yeah. She's dead.
She's dead. Moving her is not going to matter.
Yeah, it's just so ridiculous. And even though this movie's it's back to this entry is back to a more serious tone. This is more like the first movie. There is a lot of fun stuff.
I think it's got a nice edge of humor in it.
Yeah, I agree.
There's a lot of stuff in here that feels a little over the top, like the third one, and a little tongue in cheek. Like they sort of know what they're, they know what they're doing. Especially there's a couple moments in, I believe it's the next death. At the massage parlor.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is
probably the
high camp.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a character that it's fun to watch him go through this because, man, I don't know if they intended to, but I wrote down that he looked like Jared from Subway. And he's constantly on the phone,
oh, God.
Talking to people really sleazy and just very much like, ooh, ooh.
Yeah,
he's kind of like a nerdy, horny womanizer type asshole guy.
Yeah.
And thief.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
He's not a likable character. I looked him up. I think he's probably the most successful person in this movie. He's had the longest career and the most credits, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's been working. Him. He's been working a lot.
He's good in this.
He
is
good.
Yeah. I think the cast overall in this is much better.
Yeah.
Than part four. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, everyone was kind of just, eh. Yeah.
Did y'all, this might be a little bit of a side tangent. Did y'all pick up on all of the Easter eggs in this movie?
I did.
From previous movies, but also other movies.
Oh,
this spa scene specifically, he's wearing the Kill Bill yellow tracksuit.
Oh, funny.
With the black stripes on the side.
I did kind of notice that when he's walking down
I
there.
I noticed the log truck on the highway as they're coming to the bridge.
There was one for every movie.
Yeah.
There was a... We can talk about it at the end, maybe.
So the next kill, everyone's back at the office. They're talking about all their dead coworkers. Peter is very sullen about having just watched Candace get broken in half. Sure, fair enough. And then Isaac, this sleazy hornball, is going through, I'm presuming, dead people's desks to look for stuff to steal. And he's like stealing their like
quarters.
Like, and he finds a coupon for an acupuncture session, which he goes to. And the second he goes in there, he's like, I jerk me off.
Yeah.
Like to like the receptionist. He's just so scummy.
Uh-huh.
And we end up getting a very funny sequence where an older masseuse gives him chiropractic work for some reason.
Yeah.
And then sets up his acupuncture therapy.
I love this sequence where he opens his eyes and he realizes it's an older woman and she's speaking Chinese. And he says out loud, "Do you come with subtitles?" And then the subtitles appear.
Oh, yeah, that's really funny. Yeah.
And then there's a wonderful moment, too, where she, in like perfect English, finally at the end is like, 30 minutes, you sleep.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, well, oh, you understand me.
I took a note also. I was like, she's, again, we're coming back to like the cuntometer. She was so cunty because she said in subtitles, "Of course I understand you. I'm just pretending not to."
Yeah.
Like, yes, he fucking sucks.
So, of course, through a series of mishaps, some alcohol gets spilled on the floor after a fire starts. He tries to get someone in there to help him. Doesn't work. He falls on the floor and the needles like get pushed into him. It's really rough.
It's gross.
And then... the bottle of alcohol explodes as he's like up against the wall and it knocks down a big Buddha statue that lands on his head and completely crushes his skull, which is very funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Nice, it's good.
Like the camera that's on the floor for that shot, you get a bunch of goop flying
bunch
at
of goopy
it and
blood.
Dripping down the
Yeah, that's for the 3D crowd.
Yeah.
Also in this moment, like this sequence does have, I was kind of finding out later as I was doing my research, one of the clues about the year in which this movie takes place. Because he's got that Motorola flip phone that's a little dated. And then, like, we've had people make references to, like, The Sixth Sense and Lisa Loeb.
Yes.
Because we find out at the end of this movie that this is probably taking place in, well, 99 into 2000, the beginning of the year 2000. And, I thought those fun little clues were nice.
Yeah.
They're not too much.
Yeah. Well, because especially there's a scene following, is it Isaac?
This guy's Isaac.
Yeah. Isaac's death, where we see Tony Todd again.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of alludes to a previous tragedy, but he doesn't say what it was.
That's right. And
so and it's.
That could be part six.
It could be, yeah.
Yeah. I really liked this scene with Tony Todd because he's great. So we get the obligatory scene in with featuring Tony Todd in this franchise where he's the coroner and he's picking up Isaac's body just as our survivors group like shows up and he says something to them about like good luck or whatever basically.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, wait a minute. And then he explains the rules of Death's Game.
This round of Death's Game.
This round of Death's Game, which has very different rules.
Oh, yeah.
Because he says to them basically, like, the only way to survive this now is because you owe death a life.
Mm-hmm.
You can give death someone else's life.
Yeah.
And their life becomes your life. Which seems to be the opposite of what we got in part two, where he's like, the only way out is by creating a life.
Yeah.
Which when we recorded that episode, I was like, that's confusing. That seems like there's too many extra lives now.
Yeah.
I think he's a scientist and he's just running
he's
through.
Experimenting.
Yeah, he's experimenting. Oh, okay. He's trying to figure out. Yeah.
He's overly confident in it.
Yeah, he's trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. That kind of makes sense because we do find out, like we've kind of been hinting at, that this is a prequel to the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to
in
that
such
scene,
a twist, my mind was blown. Y'all.
Oh, amazing.
Because this is also my first time seeing this one. Oh, it tasted so good.
Yeah, because in this scene where he's explaining these rules, I was like, well, wait, why didn't he tell everyone that in part one? He just does, he's just like, best of luck. Yeah. I guess it kind of makes sense because those rules didn't really work in this one.
Yeah.
There's also a really funny line from him, like, right as he walks away, he's like, I just clean up after the game is over.
Yeah.
And he, like, waves a gloved hand at them. Very dramatic. So then we get a, we're on to the next set piece here, and our hot bimbo character, Olivia, who's been wearing thick glasses throughout this movie, is at a LASIK appointment.
She's like the hot rocker bimbo chick. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's a little gothy.
She's edgy.
Edge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She says, this isn't fat. These are
these
tits.
Are tits.
These are tits. Early in the movie. And this one actually kind of made me feel sad.
Me too.
It was kind of heartbreaking because she's getting strapped into the LASIK machine. And she is, like, so scared and that they've got to give her, like, an emotional support teddy bear
teddy
that she
bear.
Is, like, clinging onto. And she's, like, shivering. And I was like, oh, this is one of the things that always breaks my heart in horror movies.
Yeah.
Just when they have, like, a pathetic character that's, like, just sort of scared and they just get, like, eradicated.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah.
It does help to even out the issues that we had with the fourth one where everybody was unlikable. Like,
true.
It does. Sure. It is hard. It is hard to watch something like this with her, and it does make you feel gross, but it's better than us just having a female version of Isaac.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. Sure. And she's like, she was kind of a little bit steely earlier in the movie, and it's like, it gives her a little bit more dimensionality to have, like, a moment of vulnerability.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say the word contours again because I said the word contours like four times last time we recorded. But what you think happens, happens. The LASIK machine, the
malfunctions,
the coolant thing
water
doesn't work.
Spilling on an outlet.
Yeah, yeah. While the doctor's in the other room. The
doctor left her there, which I'm like, man, I get it because the assistant was not responding, but. You know that your patient is extremely stressed and you're going to just leave her in the room with your
immobilized.
Eyeball like completely held open by those clamps or whatever. And
pried open, probably drying out.
Yeah.
And the laser goes up to 11 and shoots her eyeball out and then cuts her, shreds her hand to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally gets out of it just as... Sam and Molly arrive with the doctor to hopefully save her. And then she steps on something and slips in her heel.
The eyeball from the teddy bear, because she was squeezing it so hard, the eyeball popped off. And she steps on it, rolls her ankle, falls through the window of the office or the exam room and plummets
onto a car.
And then her other eyeball pops out
and then gets run over.
It's not yet.
This one was mean. But this was also for me just like the kill we expected in number two with the dentist.
Exactly.
It hit all the same beats, but this time she fell out of the window.
It's
whereas,
another doctor's office that's on like the 12th floor.
Yeah.
It's also kind of fun that they in the premonition, she falls into the water, but then is crushed by a car.
Yeah.
And in this, she falls onto a car. Little cheeky.
Or also, there's also the element of her kind of surviving the initial thing. She survives the fall into the water. And this, she survives the laser getting her, shooting her eye, but she just falls out the window.
It would have been, this entire thing could have happened where her like, the eyeball falls out of the teddy bear. Her LASIK surgery starts, goes completely fine. She still steps on the eyeball and flies out the window.
Yeah.
So there aren't a lot of, I don't have a lot of special features for four or five. I don't think either of them have commentary tracks on it. I don't have a physical copy of five either. Mm-hmm. I tried to source one too late because I couldn't get it easily on the usual internet shopping platforms.
Yeah, yeah.
I just ran out of time. But I do know in this one that there are a couple of alternate death sequences. I think there's just two, and I think it's these last two. Isaac, in that sequence, instead of getting his head squished, there's like a version they filmed where he like gets burned to death, fully engulfed in flames, which fine. The Buddha one is more fun.
The Buddha is fun. It is fun. He taps the belly of the Buddha as he goes coming in.
Yeah, yeah. And then in this one, I think there's how I read the description, and it's basically the same, except you see her other eye get gouged out. Apparently they filmed something with that. And then she falls out the window like she does in the final cut. But then you wouldn't be able to get the eyeball gag after that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
I think those are the only two that were different. So at this point, we go back to the steamy paper factory where Nathan, you can tell he's been getting antagonized by this bully, Roy.
Yeah.
And it seems like he's considering like killing him just because he's the most annoying person in his life. So he calls him over for a conversation on a catwalk. Then he sees like some hook going over them and he's like, oh my God, Roy's going to get killed. I can't do this. He tries to save Roy. Roy does the same thing he's done in every scene where he immediately starts a fight, tells him to go fuck himself. And then through just happenstance, Roy falls off the catwalk and the hook goes through his skull, starting at the bottom of his jaw. Kind of a fun effect.
Yeah.
Good sequence. Kind of exciting. I was a little bit confused about how this played out, whether or not that was death doing it or if this was just an honest industrial mishap.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was some of death in there because there's some like wiring that's kind of sparking and weird stuff happening. And like, I get the idea that death is presenting them with some ideas. We'll hear from another character in a moment that kind of says that too, where there are all these opportunities that I could trade a life for mine. And that's maybe what death is setting up. But Nathan is deciding like, oh shit, I can't do it. And he tries to, you know, like we said, push him out of the way, but it backfires. And,
And then we get we get the final piece of information about this at the very end, the very last scene in the movie. So we'll bookmark this in your head if you haven't seen it. At this point, everyone comes down to the factory from the office, including their boss, Dennis. And Peter is very like, hey, man, did you kill him? Did you fucking kill him? Did you kill him, right?
Yeah.
You killed him, right? Like, you can tell like Peter's like pretty unhinged at this point. And Nathan kind of weirdly responds, I guess I did.
I did. Yeah.
Like, no, you didn't.
No.
You absolutely didn't. No. And then very abruptly at this point, a wrench falls into a piece of equipment and it flies into Dennis's face, killing him instantly.
Yep.
That was a fun one with no setup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one does a good job of like setup and payoff in these sequences. So this was a nice little contrast to those.
That one worked. It was way more effective than George in number four with the ambulance.
And there's a fun piece of gore when you get to see his body laying on the floor with the wrench pushed back into his skull. Mm-hmm. Apparently when he was doing interviews for this on late night shows, he did one late night show where they showed this clip of his death, like uncensored on TV.
Whoa.
Which I thought was
the late show. I don't know how you could get away with it otherwise.
I think it was on George Lopez's show, actually.
What?
Now that I think about it.
No.
That's just what I read. And then, then we get into more of the plotty stuff here. Sam leaves the office to go to his night job working as a chef, which is insane.
That's insane.
You get to the, I was like trying to do the math. I was like, so he gets to work at like 8 or 9. He gets off at 5. Then he goes to work at the restaurant immediately. And he's there like cleaning up at the end of the day. So he's done at like midnight to 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's getting up at 6.
Mm-hmm. He's hustling. He's hustling, baby.
He's killing himself. He's not being, he's not fulfilled with his job as a poor performing salesman at a paper mill.
Correct.
Paper factory.
Yes.
It's at this point that Molly shows up for the dinner that he promised her because he's thinking of accepting an internship at a restaurant in Paris, which...
Another clue.
Another big clue about the timeline of this movie. And they're having a nice dinner when Peter shows up, still acting pretty unhinged.
Oh, yeah.
No one's picking up on, like, you know, someone just told this guy that the only way to save his own life is to kill someone else. And he's acting really weird. Peter has a gun.
Gasp.
Suddenly a gun.
Suddenly a gun.
Also, I was wrong. This is the one that ends with the AC/DC song, not the last one.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I can't remember what the last one ends with.
Peter chases them through the restaurant to try to kill
Molly
because she survives.
Yes.
He's like, I can't kill Sam because he was going to die anyway.
He's supposed to die.
Mm-hmm. Supposed to die. So it's not going to work. He's chasing around the kitchen until Sam skewers him from the back with like a rotisserie.
Yeah, thing. Well, he kills before the that FBI agent.
Yeah. Agent Block, someone that we played by Courtney B. Vance, someone that we haven't mentioned so far in this episode. He has a lot of dialogue in this movie.
He does. Mm-hmm.
He's kind of a weird character because he's just kind of like, it's kind of like the first one again where there's two like doofy FBI agents are just kind of following Alex around and like popping up.
Yeah.
At each death scene.
Yeah.
That's kind of the same thing here.
Yeah. They bring up the bit of like, is it terrorism at the beginning with the bridge collapse? And this FBI agent is asking like, how'd this guy know? Did he plan it? And so he's been kind of following all of these survivors' deaths. And he, for some reason, shows up there. I don't know.
It was weird.
He just shows up.
He gets in, he tells them after like the first or second time that they're together that he's like, I don't think that y'all did it anymore. I'm just trying to help or whatever. And so he's kind of keeping tabs on them. And
That was a really nice change of this kind of character trope.
Yeah.
Like, cause the first two cops are very like in the first movie, very doggedly pursuing him and they're being like very pushy and kind of obnoxious, like
abducting him off of the street.
Yeah, the child.
Of the
literal child. So I liked this more level-headed character, and like Courtney B. Vance is like a really good
he's
actor.
Great.
Mm-hmm. So it was a good fit for him. So he finds Molly in the kitchen and she's like, oh, Peter is here. He's trying to kill me with a gun. And he's like, oh, really? And then he gets shot
bang,
in the back.
Bang.
Yep.
But Peter's not done yet because now there's a witness.
Yeah.
So he keeps pursuing Molly to kill her anyway.
Yeah.
And then that's when he gets skewered by Sam after a kind of a fine fight sequence. Yeah. It's kind of this whole sequence is kind of good. It's like a fun, well-edited, well-directed chase.
Yeah. There's a little bit of different tension of not just death, but this guy trying to kill you.
Right.
This is the one that it took what they tried to do with Ian in 3 and I think made it a little bit more believable.
Yeah, they filled
it out a little bit more. You could see Peter's decline after his girlfriend's death from grief to survivalist to being driven insane by the idea of death being an entity that can be tricked in a way, and it makes him turning into the villain at the end a little bit more believable for me.
Yeah. It's also kind of, this is kind of jumping ahead here a little bit, because he kills Agent Block, which is, I guess we also determined that it doesn't work anyway.
Yeah.
Because like you kind of see like the death ripples like going away. And it's like, oh, I'm safe. And then he gets skewered.
Yeah.
But that doesn't count for Sam. It's him taking life. So it turns out that Molly has decided to go to Paris with Sam.
Mm-hmm.
So we see them boarding a plane.
Two weeks later.
Yeah, we get another 2 weeks later. 4 and 5 both end with 2 weeks later. I think the first one is a lot longer than that. I couldn't remember the time lapse at the end. But I was like, oh, is this like a trope for this franchise? I don't know.
Yeah.
Death just needs some time for his desserts. He needs a break between dinner and dessert.
He's like, he needs to regroup a little bit as well. So they're on a plane that should look very familiar to you once you see it from the outside. And then as they're like buckling up to taxi out to the runway, we see a group of high school students that look very familiar
being hustled off
the plane. And it's the flight. It's Flight 180 from the first Final Destination movie. And this entire film has been a secret prequel.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. Oh, I loved it so much.
It's so they did a really good job of not tipping their hand on this one. And it's like, oh, that's so perfect.
It paid off really well.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah. They didn't do the edging shit that we've been used to for all the other movies where they could have been giving us little tee-hees from the jump. They didn't do that. And it was really nice when it actually, the realization hit me and I just giggled and squealed.
Yeah, they really earned it. And then we get to watch Flight 180 go down again.
Mm-hmm.
Molly flies out the door or the hole that's ripped in the fuselage and she gets cut in half by the plane.
She sure does.
And then kind of like a mirror to the first movie where Alex dies, we watch Sam burn up and his head turns into a skull.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's a really good sequence.
It sure is.
And then
we get a little epilogue.
It's not done quite yet.
Not quite done yet. We see Nathan at the bar at a memorial gathering for Roy.
Yeah.
He thinks all is well when one of his coworkers comes up and says, yeah, he wouldn't have had long anyway, you know, because the doctors examined him and he had an embolism in his brain that was about to burst or something like this. And at that moment, the jet engine crashes through the ceiling and crushes Nathan.
I think it's the tire that flew off.
Oh, the tire.
I think it's, was it the tire or was it the engine?
I think it's a whole like engine part of the wing.
I thought so.
Yeah.
I thought it was the tire. It doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, no, that's in real life. The tire is in real life.
Actually. Yeah. I thought, this would have been a good one to recommend Donnie Darko pairing with as well. But anyway.
Yeah, I was a little bit confused by that. I'm like, death was like, well, I guess it doesn't work for anybody. Killing, taking a life.
Yeah.
Right. And also Molly apparently was one person that was supposed to get killed anyway.
Yeah. Or that was just, she was meant to be on the plane. She was just,
that maybe that was her.
Maybe this was the point. Yeah, I mean, that is how the last one kind of ended.
Yeah.
Also, in the last one, when there's that last moment where he says, what if this is where we're supposed to be?
Yeah.
I would have saved my time saying that. I'm like, I think we should move tables.
Yeah.
The second I have that feeling. And then we get the AC/DC song. With what?
This wonderful montage.
With the montage.
Of all of the kills from all the previous movies.
it opens really cool too. I made a note of the opening with the title credits
is one of the best ones.
The mechanisms of the deaths.
Practical.
Yeah.
Like they have like these panes of glass with like lettering on them and then they throw objects at them. There's ones that are more recognizable. Like there's a prosthetic arm that gets thrown. Right.
A bunch of nails. One?
I think there's a ladder.
There's a ladder that goes through it.
There's probably some CGI stuff there too.
Yeah.
But it looked like they
did a good job with
practical.
It. And for 3D, I bet it was super fun.
To have that
in 3D.
And like your title sequences should be splashy 3D stuff if you're going to do 3D.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like pick your spots in the actual movie a little bit more judiciously.
Yeah.
But go ham in the intro. And then do none of it in the outro. Just do a montage of all the other 2D movies. Like I said at the beginning, I really liked the overall darker tone kind of coming back. I thought the characters were good. I thought the kills were great in this one. Does anyone have a favorite kill in this that's not the gymnastics scene?
I'll be a contrarian. Good. I even wrote on here that the screw in that gymnastics scene was worse than the death. I thought the death in the gymnastics
scene
was
that's one of those relatable things. We've all stepped on something sharp.
Yeah. I was just kind of like, whatever. Yeah.
She at least went out probably pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah. She didn't know what hit her.
I mean, they're all like pretty decent.
I think Molly getting sucked out of the airplane and then sliced in half by the wing was like pretty wild.
Pretty good one.
I liked that one.
Yeah.
We have no titty tally on this.
No.
Zero.
No titties.
Zero.
We have a that good comment, like we said, where that Olivia makes early on when one of the characters is like, oh, you know, to get rid of that baby fat, you should do this. And she's like, this isn't fat. They're called tits.
I like
get a mention of tits.
Yeah. Titty mention tally.
Yeah. But yeah, I noted that it took an hour into the movie for them to even figure out that the deaths were happening in order. I really liked this change of them not necessarily, like there were a couple of deaths that they rush into and it happens right as they get there. But a lot of them before a couple of the last two, they hear about the deaths after they've already happened and they weren't anywhere near it happening. And I really liked that there were no other premonitions. Like there weren't these weird
totally
like, visions that he was having.
Mm-hmm.
It was just straightforward of this shit. Like they got the kind of a feeling like there was wind and a little bit of like light flickering or whatever that the presence was there, but there wasn't this like, kind of.
Yeah. And I am glad that it wasn't like a repeat of some earlier entries in this franchise where at every kill, they're just arriving at the last second to watch it happen.
Watch it happen.
Yeah.
Cause they don't figure it out until Olivia's LASIK kill. And then, they're actually pretty resigned not long after that. Like they don't, they like kind of leave it up to everybody to deal with it on their own in a way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like Nathan is basically like, I'm just going to keep living my life.
Yeah.
Like, which I thought was kind of interesting. Yeah. Like I thought that was like a nice change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Big, stamp of approval for me on this one and this franchise as a whole. This is a pretty solid franchise.
It is
overall.
A solid franchise.
Yeah.
I want to circle back to the Easter eggs.
Oh yeah.
Did y'all
pick
up on all of them? There was one from every movie.
There was something in The Office.
The Office, Olivia knocks over a picture on her desk.
Oh, that's the roller coaster.
And it's a picture
photo
outside of the roller coaster.
I remember that one. Yeah.
From 3.
In that same office, there's a shot of him in front of his desk and there's an airplane and like a big race car and maybe like a truck on his
Yeah, and they pass by like the logging truck at the beginning, and then at the very end, the picture of Roy at his wake or whatever it is him standing in front of a NASCAR. They do
it's
some little
there.
Subtle, yeah, it's like, hey, we've made four other of these.
Yeah. Yeah, go back and check them out.
That's cute.
Well, I'm guessing the answer is yes, but are we all looking forward to part 6?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I hope they get it. They get it right. I forget who the director was. I noted down the writers here. It's being written by a Guy Busick and Laurie Evans Taylor. And Busick, I didn't recognize any of Laurie Evans Taylor's credits. It was a lot of TV stuff that I hadn't seen. Busick has written for a lot of Radio Silence projects.
Oh, okay.
Pretty much all the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Ready or Not, Scream, Scream 6, and Abigail, which is about to come out, are all written by him. So that bodes pretty well. That's a pretty good hit rate, I think.
And you said you did not know who wrote for?
There's a co-writer.
Laurie Evans Taylor?
Yeah, and I forgot who it was that was directing it, because as I recall, I don't think he was very familiar to me.
So writing credits for Laurie Evans Taylor, there's only 4: Desire TV series, Wicked Wicked Games. She was the head writer for that, so like 63 credits. Save Our Shelter, and then Bed Rest.
Yeah, nope.
Bed Rest, 2022. She wrote the script for that. And then the director, so there's actually 2 directors listed for Final Destination Bloodlines: Zach Lipovsky and Adam B. Stein.
Oh, that's right. I did look at their credits. I don't know anything that they've done. So who knows?
Apparently, Zach Lipovsky did a live action TV movie of Kim Possible in 2019.
Okay.
Call me, beat me.
Well, I'm excited for it. We're all excited for it.
Oh, Leprechaun Origins.
Oh, okay.
He directed Leprechaun Origins.
Right. That's the good one.
Yeah. It's not the WWE one.
All right, we're excited again. Yay.
All right. Double feature pairings for Final Destination 5. Scott, do you want to start us off?
I'll start. I've got a little bit of a tiny bit of a story. The entire time I was watching this movie, the lead actor who played Nick, what is his name? His name is, oh no, he played Sam. His name is Nicholas DeGosto. Looked so familiar to me and it was driving me crazy. I pulled it up like four times, his IMDb, because I was like, I have to have seen him in something. Have not seen him in anything else, but I think I realized that he looks like the lead actor in the movie that I'm going to pair with this.
Okay.
One of my favorite movies, Piranha 3D. There you go. Dude, were you actually going to do Piranha?
I see it circled on Ralph's page.
Why were you going to pick Piranha 3D?
Because it's a really good 3D movie. I thought this movie was really...
Ralph, we've been so in step on all of our pairings for these movies. That's wild.
I just
remember
seeing Piranha 3D in theaters, and there's a scene where someone leans over the side of a boat to puke, and the camera goes to where the water level is, and we're looking up at the person, and the puke hits us, and I was like, this is what 3D is for.
This is art. It's not the dick that gets bitten off and floats by the camera.
That's also
He just the act Nicholas DeGosto or whatever reminded me so much of Stephen R. McQueen, who plays Jake Forrester in Piranha 3D. I need to go back and rewatch it to figure out what exactly it was. Maybe it's the voice, maybe it's like the hair or the eyes. I don't know.
Yeah. I should have written I should have known that you would pick this one.
It is like one of my top five movies of all time.
Oh man, I might go back and see if I have some other ones from previous ones that I didn't recommend.
Well, while you're doing that, I've been wavering back and forth here. I almost said Donnie Darko because you mentioned it earlier. I was like, oh yeah, that did cross my mind. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Friday the 13th Part 3 3D.
Nice.
If you haven't seen it, it's the 3D one. It's a lot of stuff coming at the camera, and it's kind of stupid, but it's a pretty fun entry in that
it's
franchise.
Fun. It's a good fun one.
Do you need more time?
Oh, shit.
I didn't know. I didn't see your notes.
I might just...
You could also say Piranha 3D. You could second it.
Well, is that one also known as Piranha 3DD?
No, that's the sequel.
Okay, well, I'll recommend the sequel.
Okay, there we go.
The Piranha
that would
3DD.
Actually that one takes place at a water park, which would actually be a fun opening.
Actually, that was
sequence.
I believe
for
it was
Final Destination.
It was for I read this on IMDb trivia today. It's for 4 or 5. I think it's for 5. They talked about doing a water park intro.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, fun.
And cool. There you
I
go.
Think it was one of the producers was like, no.
Piranha 3DD. You'll get it.
My titties come in, my titty interest.
Oh, there's definitely some titties in in both of them.
Well, all right. Well, we've got one more thing to do here before we get to our outro, and we're gonna take turns ranking this franchise from least good to most good. Well, I'll say worst to best, because there is one that we all agreed was bad. Scott?
Okay, so worst is 4. Then we go, oh God, I'm going to make some people really mad with this. 4, 2, 3, 5, 1.
Wow. All right. Interesting.
I think ours are going to be...
Are we
little,
close?
No. Oh, okay. I think all of ours are going to be a little different.
Okay.
All right, Ralph. I just put down 4 to start?
Yes, 4 is the worst. I want to say that like 4 is the worst. The rest of the 4 are all good. Like I
agree.
It's hard for me to put these in order, but I'm going to go 4, 3, 1, 2, 5.
Wow.
I love this one.
That's amazing.
It's the best movie of them, of like how they did it. I think with the choices that they made and everything was really fun, and it's got this kind of weird sense of humor to it, and it's just enough seriousness, and yeah.
Man, I'm going to be way more different than both yours. I thought we were all going to be maybe a little bit closer.
I'm already going to change mine. I'm going to change mine when you finish. Now that I've had 30 more seconds to think about it.
Okay. I love the classics, so I'm going to favor the earlier part of this franchise a little bit more here, but you bet I'm starting with 4.
Oh yeah.
And then Again, the other four are all really good, so there's not a big distance in quality here for me. But I'm gonna go with 5, 3, 1, 2. Like, I just loved watching 2. I have so much fun.
Favorite.
I have so much fun with 3, and I had a great time with 5, and I love 1 as well. But I kind of, in my heart, I was like, I like the sillier, more ridiculous tones in this franchise. I think like those are the ones that I think I talked about this when we talked about 2 a little bit, but like, if I'm gonna pick like one Final Destination movie off the shelf just to like pop on for like laundry or to have some fun, I'm more likely to pick like 2 or 3.
Yeah,
most of the time I would say. Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah,
yeah.
The only thing that I'm gonna change on mine is I'm gonna change my 3 and 2. So I'm doing 4, 3, 2, 5, 1.
Yeah,
that's how I'm changing it. After I thought about that, I was like, no. 2 is, it feels weird putting 3 in fourth place because it is fun and it's good. And I, like you both shared, all of them after you get away from number 4, the others are so good, it's hard to differentiate.
Yeah.
Because you could turn literally any of them on and I'd be happy with what we were watching.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's good stuff in all of them. And like, I hope that stays true with part 6.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bloodlines. We have to go. It's our Bloodline series. We've had so many Bloodline movies.
Yeah. I really hope they change that title.
I know.
Right? I don't think they will.
Well, all right. Any final thoughts here? Do we have a favorite? We talked about this a little bit, maybe ranking the openings.
I did rank my openings. They're not not much different. The only thing that changed is that I do love the number 2 opening. So
yeah.
5 and 2 would be switched. But basically 4, 3, 1, 5, 2.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I could rank them off the top of my head, but 2 is definitely my favorite.
It's probably best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably followed closely by 5, and then I'd probably go 3, 1, 4. Going down, reverse order that time.
I don't know. 4 is a really good. I'm thinking 5. 5 is a really good opening.
Yeah.
What was 4? 4 was.
4 was the NASCAR.
I've already
NASCAR.
Forgot
we talked about it.
This is
2 hours
ejected
ago.
From my brain already. Yeah, NASCAR. No, that was the worst for sure.
Yeah, yeah. There is a lot of correlation between how good the openings are and the rest of the film is going to be. I think that's why when we initially talked about doing it, ranking the openings, we were like, they're probably going to be pretty close.
Yeah.
They pretty well are.
Yeah.
All right. Are we done?
Yes.
I believe so.
Wow.
We've reached it.
Something else. We don't even know what we're going to cover next week yet.
We don't.
Well, if you want to find out, you can follow us on social media. You can find the Screaming Room on Twitter at The Room Cast. You can find us on Instagram at Screaming Room Pod. And you can email us at screamingroompod@gmail.com. So, thank you, everybody who listened to this episode. If you liked what you hear, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us get discovered. Or leave a 5-star review on Spotify Mobile. And if you don't like us, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and then tell us why on there. I will read it on the show. And thank you again to everyone that's been donating to the show. It really helps us out a lot. We really do appreciate it. And thank you again to Veronica for the
Victoria.
Oh, I did it again.
Cut this out.
Maybe we have a Veronica follower. Dude,
Victoria, thank you. Thank you for the donation and the nice review. We really appreciate that. And if you want to donate, click support the show in the show notes. And we're actually, I think I've already kind of tipped one big announcement on the Twitter account, but we've got a big announcement coming up in the next month about what we're going to be covering. And we're super fucking excited about it. And I think I just got an email about it while we were recording. So
cool.
I'm going to close up this recording and read it.
All right.
All right. So thank you for listening again, everybody. And all of your destinations be final. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye. Na 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 na